How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Knox Manning in Hollywood, taking you on another brief journey behind the scenes. Once again, we draw the curtain to watch a fragment of forgotten drama, a story of people and places already hidden in the background of destiny. Today, we shall meet a young New England lad whose gift of poetry and his grim determination made him the toast of two continents. You are so right. And now let us journey back to a New England city in the year 1820. The leaves are turning all the bright colors of autumn. From a corner room on the third floor of a huge brick house, a tall, bright-faced boy of 13 gazes pensively at the beautiful scene spread before him. The boy's mind wasn't upon the beauty of the city streets, nor the tall shade trees that bordered them. No, his thoughts turned back to the summer just past and the wonderful visit he'd had at his grandfather's farm upstate. The country around his grandfather's farm was rich with the legends of frontier struggles and Indian fights in the days when this region of lake and pine was the debatable borderland between the colonists and the red man. One of these battles had been waged on the shores of a small lake known as Lovell's Pond. The story of that fierce and fatal fight pictured itself indelibly in the boy's fancy. It rang in his head as he tramped the woods and fields of the farm. It shaped itself into rhythm now as he thought of it in his Portland home. He turned away from the window and walked over to the round-top mahogany table. He seated himself, selected a quill pen, and began to write slowly, pondering the words. At the top of the page, he penned the words, "The Battle of Lovell's Pond." Then he began framing his thoughts with a flow of crude, boyish poetry. Then he pondered what to do next. He thought of his friend, the editor of the Gazette. Perhaps the poem was good enough to publish, and he'd see his name in print. He slipped quietly down the stairs and out the back door. He ran all the way to the newspaper office, afraid that if he hesitated for a moment, he'd back out of this bold venture. His heart sank when he reached the office door. The place was closed for the night. He was too late. Taking a last chance, he folded the precious manuscript and addressed it to the editor, and then he pushed it into the letterbox alongside the door. The next evening, Henry went with his father to call upon a friend, Judge Mellon. Henry and the judge's son were talking before the fire when suddenly the young poet's heart beat fast. "Have you read that poem in this morning's Gazette?" he heard the judge ask. "No," replied Henry's father carelessly. "I didn't notice it. Good for anything?" "No, sir," was the judge's verdict. "It's stiff, remarkably stiff, and not original either. It's all borrowed, every line of it. Why, my boy there could write a much better one on the same subject, much better." Henry said nothing, though the judge's words stung him like a lash. That night he climbed the stairs to his lonely room to cry himself to sleep over the mortification of the unjust criticism. But mingled with his disappointment was a strong will and a determination to write verse and become famous as a poet. Now, before the conclusion to our story, a word from your announcer. 64 years after his first poem was slipped into that letterbox of the Portland Gazette, there gathered in Westminster Abbey a group of famous men and women assembled to honor a man who'd added grace, beauty, strength, and glory to the English language. The great poet was loved and admired by both nations, and now the greatest honor of all was about to be paid him. The procession of English and American notables proceeded to the famous section of the great abbey known as the Poets' Corner. Here, one of the officials unveiled a noble marble bust. A boy's gift of poetry and his grim determination to succeed had made him the toast of two continents, for upon the pedestal was the name Henry W. Longfellow. This is Knox Manning inviting you to join me again tomorrow at this time for another journey into that dim half-light where chance and destiny lift men out from behind the scenes. This is a Hamilton Whitney radio production transcribed in Hollywood.